Waiting in the Crucible. Commentary for the September 10th, 2022 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. I call on you, my God, for you will answer me. Turn your ear to me and hear my prayer. Show me the wonders of your great love. You who save by your right hand those who take refuge in you from their foes. Psalm 17, verses 6 and 7. The world we live in is a troubled place. In case we were tempted to forget, we are bombarded with media reminders of just how troubled it has become. When I was younger, people talked about the news cycle and watched for events at certain times of day. But now the bad news seems to stream continuously, like a polluted stream, choked with stench, decay, and offal. Where once we would buy a radio or a television, and these would be gateways for the heartaches of the world to enter our homes, the expense was then relatively minimal, and the programming free of cost. But today we each spend thousands of dollars annually to provide a digital freeway from the world into our homes. While we would never allow through our front doors the activities, thoughts, and personalities we see through the media, we willingly throw open the digital doorway to the family home. It saves evil the trouble of having to show up in person. In a way, it is sort of like Zoom church, only for the opposition. This may spur some to write letters, protest, boycott advertisers, and become reactionary activists in many other ways. But with multi-level shell corporations, powerful and wealthy political lobbyists, and corruption founded on greed, the tide of evil seems overwhelming. Trying to force evil to stop usually has limited success anyway. If evildoers could be forced to be good, they would not have become evil in the first place. They would have been naturally inclined to observe those laws that benefit us all. However, the mere existence of those laws demonstrates that evil does not care to be restrained. Even more problematic is who those people are who are doing all the evil. It's you and me. Theologians argue about whether we are this way because that is how we are born, original sin, or if we have become this way because of our ongoing failure to love as we were made to do in God's image. The prophet Jeremiah tells us that we can sooner change our skin than we can change our desire to do selfish, evil things. We're like a tray full of crabs, scrambling around, trying to pinch one another. When God put his finger into the tray in the form of his son, we pinched him too. We're like that. We want to grab everything we can and hold it in our pincers and never let go. It doesn't matter how useless the thing is we are holding tightly onto. It may be garbage, but it is our garbage. We found it, and we aren't sharing. What a terrible world for Jesus to be born in. But he has returned to heaven. He will come back one day, but in the meantime, we must live here. How do we wait amid the mess, especially when we are contributing to the problem? First, we need to come to terms with what we can and cannot change. We cannot fix ourselves. Who among us has not tried to be a better person and failed, usually repeatedly? The longer we live, the more that reality comes home to dwell. This is often referred to as the wisdom of age. We begin life seeing the world as full of promise. Perhaps this is even a latent memory from the long-lost Eden of Genesis. But as plans fail or are thwarted in the process of realizing those promises, we begin to discover the brokenness all around us and find brokenness and bitterness seemingly seeping in from everywhere. At that point, people will often do one of two things. They will either simply do those things that seem to work after a fashion, simply to move forward, or they will give up. This is the world imposing its will upon each generation, for everyone to conform for the sake of convenience. Life does appear to go easier as a result, until it doesn't. When it doesn't, the collapse that ensues can bring a willingness to try a different path. They may even try the self-sacrificial cross of religion. But if they continue to be driven by the desire to conform for the sake of avoiding the struggles of growth, once an alternative path that shows it might work becomes available, they will return to their former ways. Jesus shared this pattern in the parable of the sower and the seed. If we are truly honest with ourselves, we have succumbed to this kind of temptation as well, far too many times, to feel good about it. Most seem to muddle through life in this fashion, and we end up eventually looking back at life and, despite some good memories, wondering what that was all about anyway, feeling we may have missed something along the way. Our desire to achieve what others before failed to accomplish, and our own dreams, both unrealized. Second, we need to understand we can no more fix others than we can ourselves. Politics denies this reality. At its root, it is a science of using power to control the activities of others. The only reason for needing such control would be to shape the direction of society and the individuals submissive to that power. Put simply, it means fixing society despite being unable to fix ourselves. When we try to fix ourselves, our own will often stands in the way. It is not different when we try to fix others. If their will is not amenable, change is resisted and even prevented. Political power is touted as the answer to overcoming that resistance, but it is a false hope based on our selfish nature. Society may acquiesce if it sees even a temporary advantage, but then readily rebel if it sees a better advantage now lies elsewhere. Once we understand this, the attempt to fix others by any means of our derivation has no more promise than those attempts to fix ourselves. Entire societies can look back at their continually repeated failings and see that our failure to reckon with this has often returned us back to where we began. But this too often is not without the forfeit of countless lives and endless resources along the way. The answer to all this is probably the hardest thing for us to admit. We do not have the answer, at least not within us. We see this often on social media. No matter how obvious someone's errors are to everyone else, almost never will they admit that they have made an error and apologize. Pride stands in the way, and fear. We fear the loss of respect from people we will never meet, people we have never even shared so much as a meal with. Some of these people are hiding behind false profiles with stolen photos and hidden lives, yet we fear what they might think of us if we do not prove we are right and they are wrong. As we let them crank up the temperature while we attempt to prove ourselves to them, their only desire is to prove that they were able to provoke us into losing control, demonstrating they are the ones in control. When we see ourselves as more righteous than others, more spiritually advanced, it becomes very difficult to love others as ourselves, for we will always be loving ourselves more. But when we see their plight as no different from our own, we can love with understanding. We can love according to their need, because we have that need also. Sadly, so much in our lives argues against seeing things that way. We spend cartloads of money and decades of our lives accumulating knowledge just so we don't have to admit that we don't have the answers. Admitting it could betray the futility of much of what we have lived for. But there is only a very small pathway off that frustrating road, and admitting that we are not the answer for fixing everyone's problems is the key that opens the tiny gateway to that path. When we open that gate, we will find the truth about ourselves, about life, and how to become whole. The truth is not about how much knowledge we can buy. It is not about how much we can possess that others cannot. It is not about what people we have in our phone's contact list. It is not about sitting around waiting for Jesus to come and proving by our resistance to change, any change, how faithful we are. Jesus was concerned that because of the evil in the world, love would die. He revealed that those who managed to keep love alive, despite that, would be saved from the evil. Even so, looking down the centuries to the future, he also worried that when he came, faith could be gone from the earth. Our job, then, if we can set aside our own ambition and arrogance, is to keep love alive while waiting in this crucible. Thereby, we will not only bless the lives of others, we will save ourselves. Thank you for listening to this podcast. You can find hundreds of other podcasts, as well as written forms of these commentaries, at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. The written forms also have the scripture footnotes supporting the thoughts in the commentaries. May God richly bless you and your family.